The next speaker is Seth Baum. He's Executive Director of the Global Catastrophic Risk Institute, a non-profit think tank that Baum co-founded in 2011. His research focuses on risk, ethics, and policy questions for major threats to human civilizations, including nuclear war, global warming, and emerging technologies. He received a PhD in geography from Pennsylvania State University, and his research has appeared in many journals, including Acta Astronomica, Ecological Economics, Science and Engineering Ethics, Science and Global Security and Sustainability. He also writes a monthly column for the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. He's based in New York. The title is A Catastrophic Risk of Nuclear War.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for having me. It's really an honor to speak at this wonderful event. So, as you mentioned, I work for the Global Catastrophic Risk Institute. We are an independent, nonprofit think tank studying major risks to the survival of human civilization. And we also help develop practical and effective solutions for reducing the risk. And I should clarify that in this talk, the views expressed are my own views and not the views of the Institute. So in this talk, I'll be discussing the risk of nuclear war, including why this is such a major risk, and also some of the things that we can do to reduce the risk. But before getting into the details of the risk analysis, I'll say a few words about why the global catastrophic risks are so important. To see this, it helps to take a step back and look at the big picture. So imagine that you're alive here on Earth 5 billion years from now. Now, 5 billion years, this is towards the upper limit of when it is physically possible to live here on Earth. The sun gradually gets warmer, and over billions of years, eventually it becomes too hot for life as we know it to exist here on Earth. Of course, billions of years from now, we might not just exist here on Earth. We might have spread out across the stars into an immense galactic civilization that dwarfs anything that we could have here on Earth. The global catastrophes, these are the events that could mean success or failure, that could ruin all of this great, beautiful future that could exist for many people. And so imagine yourself living here on Earth 5 billion years from now, part of all of this. Imagine looking back on the whole of human history and imagine what you would think about what we have here today. Would we succeed at avoiding global catastrophe such that all of this could happen? Or would we fail denying countless members of countless future generations the chance to ever live? So when we talk about the catastrophic risk of nuclear war, by far the biggest thing at stake is no less than the entire fate of human civilization. So, could nuclear war be that event that makes that difference? Well, we know that a nuclear weapon can cause an enormous explosion. And we know that that explosion can cause great damage and kill many people. But a single nuclear explosion on its own would not mean the end of human civilization. And in fact, the biggest risk from nuclear weapons is not the explosion itself, but the smoke from the firestorm that rises high up into the atmosphere. And as Alan Robach and his colleagues have done an excellent job of showing, that smoke then spreads all around the world, where it blocks incoming sunlight, cooling the surface of the planet, and reducing precipitation. These extreme environmental conditions make it very difficult for plants to grow, including the plants that we grow for our food. One study looked at a nuclear war with 100 nuclear weapons and looked at the environmental consequences and the famine that could come from that and found that 2 billion people could be at risk of starvation. Now, here's where things get a little interesting, because if 2 billion people die, then obviously this would be an enormous catastrophe. But the death of 2 billion people on its own might not make the difference in the long-term fate of human civilization. After all, if 2 billion people die, there are still 5 billion people alive and able to carry humanity into the future. Now, to be clear, this does not mean that we should not care about the death of 2 billion people. We certainly should care about that. But it does mean that from the perspective of the entire future of human civilization, it might actually not make much of a difference. So what would make the difference? Well, what would make the difference would be the permanent collapse of global human civilization. Throughout human history, we have seen a number of civilizations come and go, some never to return. And indeed, some of these collapses have been driven by environmental problems. However, none of these civilizations come anywhere close to the scale and sophistication of the modern global civilization that we live in today. And so it's very difficult to say whether or not a nuclear war would cause the permanent collapse of global human civilization. One thing we can say, though, is that the larger the nuclear war is, the more likely it is to result in a permanent collapse. I developed this point in a new paper coming out in the journal Contemporary Security Policy, where I compare the size of the nuclear war to the probability of permanent catastrophe from that war. If there are zero weapons, then there is no nuclear war, and in turn, no probability of a permanent catastrophe from it. If there are 16,000 weapons used, which is about the number that there are across the world today, then there is a high probability of such a permanent catastrophe. How high is it? It's hard to say exactly how high, but plenty high enough for this to be something that we should be worried a lot about. I say that for the probability of a permanent catastrophe from the environmental consequences of nuclear war to be insignificantly small, so small that we have more important things to worry about, including all of the other catastrophic risks that are out there, I suggest a threshold of maybe around 50 nuclear weapons. This gives a fairly small chance of this happening. Now, I want to pause and say two things about this. First, my study only looked at the environmental consequences of nuclear war. You can imagine a nuclear war with, say, 30 or 40 nuclear weapons, especially if they hit major cities, taking out important nodes in the global economy, then there are important systemic effects from that, and perhaps you could end up with a permanent catastrophe from that as well. This is something that has not yet been accounted for. And second, even if human civilization can survive into the distant future with 30 or 50 or however many nuclear weapons, that doesn't mean that it's a bad idea to aim for zero nuclear weapons total in the world. There are still plenty of good reasons to push for zero total nuclear weapons. But the important thing is not the distinction between zero or 50 nuclear weapons. The important thing is the distinction between either of those and the 16,000 nuclear weapons that we have on Earth today. It is imperative that we make sure that those 16,000 weapons are not used and that we reduce that number down to a safe level. Now, the discussion so far has just been about the severity of a nuclear war if a nuclear war occurs. A full discussion of the risk should also look at the probability of nuclear war. After all, if there's no chance of a nuclear war ever happening, then we don't need to worry about the severity of the consequences if it does happen. And indeed, there are some people who would say that the probability is basically zero. After all, nuclear war has never happened before. Well, okay, that's not quite correct. There has been a nuclear war. World War II was a nuclear war. But it is true that there has never been a large nuclear war with 50 or 16,000 nuclear weapons. That much never has before. But it would be a mistake to say that just because it's never happened before, therefore it's impossible. This is the same mistake that people in Britain made several centuries ago when they believed that black swans were impossible. To them, all swans are white. They had never seen a black swan before. But it turns out there are black swans. They live in Australia. There's a photograph of one right there. And so they made the mistake of believing just because they had never seen it before, therefore it couldn't happen. So it is with black swans, so too for nuclear war. There's another mistake, though. Researchers call it the observation selection effect. If a large enough nuclear war could kill all of us, and maybe it could, If it could, then the fact that we are here observing that no nuclear war has ever happened before requires that no nuclear war has ever happened before. We could only observe such a large nuclear war for that brief moment when we're dying from it. And so the fact that we're here today having this conversation requires that such a war has never happened. So we cannot say that the probability is zero just because we've never seen it before. So what can we say? Well, one thing we can do is look at the history that we have observed and learn what we can from that. For example, the Cuban Missile Crisis is perhaps the closest the world has ever come to a nuclear war. Martin Hellman of Stanford University developed a model of the probability of nuclear war from crises like the Cuban Missile Crisis. The model went through the series of steps from the relative calm before the crisis to the missiles being found, which started the crisis, to the crisis itself, shown in black because this is what has previously happened, and then in red, what has not previously happened, a nuclear weapon being used from that crisis, and that escalating into a full nuclear war. And for the probability of each step going on to the next step, he estimated that for in black, looking at the history we've observed, and then in red, using a range of numbers, because this has never happened before, there's some uncertainty about what the probability would be. When you multiply all these numbers together, you get an answer for the total probability of nuclear war from this type of crisis. Well, here you get a range, because we have a range of numbers underneath. The range is once per 200 years to once per 5,000 years. This is what Martin Hellman found in this study. Now, once per 200 years, once per 5,000 years, these might seem like low probabilities. This might seem like a rare event. And it's true. This type of nuclear war is unlikely to occur this year or next year or the year after that. But the longer we wait, the more likely it is to occur. And it is basically impossible for us to expect that we can continue existing into the distant future, certainly not billions of years from now, without one of these nuclear wars happening. So this is for the probability of one type of nuclear war. Another type is what's called inadvertent nuclear war. We heard a little bit about this earlier today. Inadvertent nuclear war is when one side misinterprets a false alarm as a real attack and launches nuclear weapons in what it believes is a counterattack, but is in fact the first strike. Now, inadvertent nuclear war is important because it means we could end up in nuclear war even if deterrence works perfectly. Okay, what's deterrence? Deterrence is threatening the other side with some sort of punishment to convince them not to do something you don't want them to do. In this case, threatening the other side with nuclear retaliation, since neither side wants to be hit with that retaliation, neither side launches nuclear weapons, it's a way of avoiding nuclear war. And nuclear deterrence works, but it does not work perfectly. The history we've seen, including the Cuban Missile Crisis, show that nuclear deterrence does not work perfectly. But even if it did work perfectly, we could still end up in an inadvertent nuclear war, because in this case, that other side actually was deterred. But the one side believed that they were under attack anyways, and so we ended up in a nuclear war. Over the years, there have been a number of close calls, some of which are shown here on this slide. False alarms that were at least briefly believed to be an actual nuclear attack. It includes computer glitches, a scientific rocket launch that people thought was a nuclear missile. Fortunately, in each of these cases, no nuclear weapons were launched. However, in the future, we might not be so fortunate. My colleagues and I modeled the probability of inadvertent nuclear war between the United States and Russia by using what's called a fault tree model. Now, in a fault tree model, different scenarios branch out, each of which could be at fault for causing an inadvertent nuclear war. The leaves at the bottoms of these branches are two types of false alarms and two conditions in which the false alarms could occur. The first type is the usual false alarms, which we saw examples of on the previous slide. And the other type is a nuclear terrorist attack that is misinterpreted as an attack from another country. The two conditions are crisis conditions between the two countries, in this case, the United States and Russia, and conditions of no crisis, of relative calm between the countries. And so we modeled the series of steps of going through the chain of command from receiving the false alarm all the way up to the top where the decision to launch is made. And at each step, you have a probability of the launch occurring, and we used a range of possible numbers for those probabilities because these probabilities are themselves uncertain. And we did the same for the probability of there being a crisis between those two countries. When you multiply through all these possible numbers, you get a range of results for the probability of inadvertent nuclear war between the United States and Russia. We looked at two cases. One, if this war could happen at any time, and two, if it could only happen during crisis. And there's a fairly wide range, 14 or 20 years to once per 5,000 or 100,000 range years. It's a wide range because this is a fairly uncertain risk. But when we look at the average 50 or 100 years, or even if we look at the low probabilities, once per 5,000 or 100,000 years, this is clearly something that we cannot exist into the future that long for without seeing one of these nuclear wars. One thing you notice from this is that the probability is a lot lower if it can only happen during a crisis. And this teaches us something. We can reduce the probability of inadvertent nuclear war by avoiding crises. I mean, this makes sense, right? If you're in a crisis, you're more likely to believe that you actually are under attack. And so, in practical terms, this means doing things like resolving the conflict over Ukraine, which has increased tensions between the United States and Russia, or making sure that no crisis ever occurs over Taiwan that could raise tensions between the United States and China, or other conflicts around the world between other nuclear armed countries. Indeed, this is a core reason for doing this type of detailed risk analysis, because at each step in the process, on both the probability of it happening and the severity of the consequences, we see opportunities to reduce the risk. And we also get some understanding for how effective those opportunities would be at reducing the total amount of risk. Now, you might be listening to this and thinking, okay, so what can I do to help out, to help reduce the risk? Well, I would encourage you to look at some of the NGOs, some of the non-governmental organizations that we'll be hearing about from other speakers in this conference this weekend. These are great NGOs working all around the world, doing excellent work on nuclear weapons and other issues. On nuclear weapons, a lot of the work focuses on the humanitarian consequences of nuclear weapons. By drawing attention to that, it discourages countries from using their weapons and encourages them to disarm. This is an excellent strategy with a great track record on other weapons, and they're off to an excellent start with it on nuclear weapons. And so if you're looking for a way to get involved to help reduce the risk of nuclear war, then this is a very good place to start. At the beginning of the talk, we learned about the great, beautiful future the human civilization can enjoy if only no major global catastrophe ruins it all. So the question is, how do we get from here to there? And the answer is by understanding the risks and by seizing the opportunities that we have to reduce the risks. Thank you.
Thanks, Seth.